Hey, Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs here. Coming up on today's show, Evan and I are joined by Jordan Zerm, the great Jordan Zerm, to talk about all things John Beilein. That's coming up today on Locked On Cavs.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
Cleveland, this is for you.
Hey, we're back here on Locked On Cavs. Listeners, if you're looking for the second part of our awards podcast, Evan and I did, that's going to go up in your feeds after this. So some late breaking news Sunday night in the midst of a very good All-Star game. John Beilein is not expected and is basically got one foot out the door of being the Cleveland Cavaliers coach. Whether that happens now or whether that happens at the end of the season, it's sort of up in the air right now. We'll get into all of that and more. Joining me as always is my co-host, Evan Damerel from Forbes and For the Sword and some other places. Evan, what's going on, buddy?
Not a whole lot, Chris. I'm fed up with this team. I think... You texted me around 10 o'clock last night, and you just said Jesus in all lowercase letters.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, no, really. It's just like an 11 o'clock sneak attack. How are you doing, bud?
I'm good. I had already hit the Zoloft melatonin combo, had me feeling like very asleep, and then I like made the mistake of checking Twitter. And yeah, I saw this kind of unfolding. I had a G-chat from you kind of tipping me off to this, and yeah, I missed that.
Yeah.
Which maybe I don't take the melatonin then, you know, just maybe a little extra anxiety medication, but it is what it is. But joining us, because this is such a wacky Cavs Clevelandy thing, is Jordan Zerm. You best know him probably from the work he does over the Checkdown. And him and I have a newsletter that's dropping this week that you can subscribe to below called An Eligible Man Downfield. You can find it at ineligiblecleveland.substack.com. It's Jordan Zerm on Twitter at CleveZerm. Jordan, what's going on, buddy?
Chris, thank you for having me. It's good to reunite with you on a pod. It's been far too long since we've done this. I think the last time we did this was actually right after the Cavs draft, if I'm not mistaken, when we were both there. I think that was one of the last Cavs media events I got to cover before moving westward. But yeah, I don't know. It's an incredible leak timing from the Cavs to just say, hey, should we leak this information in the fourth quarter of an All-Star game? Like, really, just you're scrolling through Twitter and you're reading tweets. You're super into the game. You're like, oh, wow, this fourth quarter is actually awesome. Like, maybe this new format is something they should go with for a long time. And then all of a sudden, like in the middle of it, there's just Woj being like, yeah, Beilein is miserable and doesn't want to coach anymore. So really just absolutely elite timing on the leak from the Cavs front office about the Beilein news, just throwing it in the middle of an All-Star game when nobody was paying attention whatsoever.
It's truly not what you want. I want to hear, we'll just hear this. I think, what is just your initial reaction to this? We'll go Jordan, Evan, and then I'll go last. But what did you guys just make of this? John Beilein is basically just like, I'm out. I'm gone in some way, shape, or form. It could be this week. It could be at the end of the season that he's done, basically, as Cavs coach. It's all but inevitable at this point, or all but happened at this point, rather. So what did you guys make of this?
So I think that I think there's obviously it's a complex situation, but I was always sort of skeptical of this hire from the beginning for a handful of reasons that I think have sort of shown themselves as the season has gone on. I think obviously the age factor plays into it. I think it's hard for what is a really, really young team outside of a couple of guys to connect with a coach in his late 60s, who has never coached at the NBA level before. So I think that was a concern to begin with. I think there were concerns early on and questions about, okay, how is like John Beilein sort of known for, you know, pushing on fundamentals and these very intense practices and these very intense film sessions that he had at Michigan. And like, is that something that's going to fly at the next level? Is he going to be able to change? And it seems like the answer to that question is a hard no. So I just felt like, you know, so many of the names that came up in that coaching search were a lot of like really respected up and coming NBA assistants. And I just so much rather would have liked the Cavs to go that route, because at least if, you know, at least if they had the same record, but you had an assistant coach who was doing some good things on offense and looked like, you know, he was able to kind of get through to the players, or Darius Garland maybe had developed a little bit more or whatever it may be, you would have a little bit of something to kind of point to and be like, yeah, the Cavs are terrible. That's fine, because this really wasn't a year about them being good. That, like, that's not the issue here. But instead, they sort of just went with this out of the box, we're trying to think ahead of the game, we're probably getting too cute type of coach. And it just is going to be a complete waste of a half of a season. And now you're going to have to go with an interim coach, and then you have to make another decision. So essentially, like, Kevin Porter, Dylan Windler, Darius Garland are about to like go through three coaches in maybe not even like a full year, which is, you know, which is crazy and not at all what you want when you're bringing in these crazy young kids and trying to rebuild an entire franchise. So I think just initially there was a little bit of shock, but also I think if you've been paying attention, it seemed like it was trending this way, and we got pretty close to it when the thugs, not slugs stuff all happened, which is just going to be a hilarious bullet point to think about in Cavs history when this is all said and done. But it felt like it was going and heading this way, and I think maybe it was, and it just kind of came to an head over the All-Star break. So definitely shocking, the timing of it, but I think there were plenty of signs that maybe this is where it was headed.
Yeah, no, everything Jordan pointed out was a red flag with Bayline kind of sat in the back of my mind, but I was willing to give him the benefit of the doubt, especially at Media Day. he's definitely like a charming and charismatic guy and can really captivate the room. And like, Chris, you know personally, when we sit in his pregame press conferences, because postgame he's miserable because the Cavs just lost.
That's another statement. Miserable is like being kind to the mood he would be in sometimes. We're just like, John, like, you need a tea? Like,
yeah.
Can I get you a back rub? Like, what do you need?
I don't know, man. I wonder, maybe, like, he seems like he loves basketball. This has been his entire life. And I wonder if maybe the Cavs have this effect on coaches, because the Cavs made Larry Drew hate basketball too by the time his time was up. So I don't know. A lot of the concerns, though, I had with him were just the transition from the coaching in college his entire career to transitioning to the NBA level at 66. Now he's 67 years old. But from what I've gathered and what I heard, and I mean, it's been reported as well, the Cavs did nothing but practice fundamentals in training camp. They ran harsh two-a-days, which can be directly correlated to Dylan Windler's stress fracture in his leg, which is never a good thing. Apparently, he tried to run some of the offensive sets that he ran at Michigan that were successful, but they ended up not really translating very well with the Cavs, and they weren't picking up on the nuances of it, if there is any, because it's a college-level offense. So he started running beige offensive, just generic NBA sets, and that's not a great look either when you have zero faith in your offensive system. But at the same time, the Cavs were never able to properly install it, I think, because they practice pivots an entire day and they practice chest passes an entire day for training camp, and that's just wasting time. And I think the fact that he wasn't able to manage time was a huge red flag, but I'm like, all right, you know what, let's roll with it, maybe it'll work. Because the Cavs' big driving thing, and like Jordan pointed out, is like, they weren't expected to win. They just wanted to build a culture and establish something healthy and cultivate that they can cultivate going forward. If with what's been reported, the JB Bickerstaff eventually taking over, Bayline sets the foundation of that. And I think he lost the attention of a lot of the veterans early just because of his college approach, and there's a bit of a trickle-down effect where you see the veterans are just kind of tuning him out and going to JB Bickerstaff based on what's been reported and what I've heard, and then the rookies do the same thing and the younger guys do the same thing. So then Bayland's losing absolute control of this locker room, and the Cavs try to their best to pretend everything's okay, and they try to like smooth things over and act like this isn't a big deal, but I'm not really surprised that he said he doesn't want to do this. I think the timing of it is always weird. You know, it's just, there's never a dull moment with this team. So, you know what? Maybe it's not as weird as I think it should be. So
overall, like, I didn't expect him to be here this time next year. It's probably, if it's not JD Bickerstaff, it'll be somebody else, because I feel like Bickerstaff has that one up in the Cavs front office, considering his dad is a part of Kobe Altman's staff. And I think that definitely certainly helps his case. And plus the fact that the players that are already connected with him as well definitely helps. But it's just, I wasn't surprised by it, but at the same time still frustrated, just because they dropped it during like the fourth quarter of the NBA, which was a very fun All-Star game. And then I start scrambling, so I'm like, well, I got to get something together now. So, and then it's just frustrating overall. And I'm kind of ready for, I know nothing formally has been announced yet, and it's kind of hinting to the fact that the decision will be made within the next, either today, we're recording this on a Monday night, or Tuesday, because the Cavs reconvene for practice on Wednesday, and you hope that the decision has been made by then. And my gut tells me that he won't be the coach by this time Wednesday.
I agree. So I'll just say first, on a human level, I hope John Beilein like can go be happy. He's clearly not happy in what he's doing, you know? So on a human level, I hope he goes and can become happy. He's got money like Kevin Love. Like, he can go do whatever he wants. This could be his last coaching job, you know? Like, this could be like the last thing he remembered by, which is a shame, because he had a very good career, was very good in college. Had flirted with the NBA with Detroit and Atlanta. It's not like the Cavs were like the only team that were ever interested in him either. So I think we can kind of note that. But this is absolutely, in terms of the Cavs, this is the absolute worst case scenario for what you're going to be hoping would happen this year, right? I mean, you're looking at this year, you're looking at things getting going. You're kind of looking at just trying to build something, and your coach is not going to last a full year. We'll get into the Bickerstaff of it all and kind of the next options. But, you know, they assembled, I think, a pretty good coaching staff. You know, the player development guys were still around. Bickerstaff comes in with experience. Antonio Lang, from everyone I talked with, the Jazz, was absolutely beloved there, did a lot of work with Gobert. Lindsey Gottlieb was someone they went out and got, and she was really good in college. And obviously, women's basketball, but it's still basketball. It all just kind of went wrong, and I can't speak to, there's a lot of unanswerable questions with this. You know, the stuff with his son, you know, we don't quite exactly know how much that's weighing on him. You know, I would love to have been a fly on the wall when he went to New York and met with Kevin Love, like however many times, like he did that once or twice and talked to him on the phone a couple times over the summer. I would love to know kind of how those things went. You know, I think maybe we should have known this wasn't going to work. Like, the moment that there was like leaks about being annoyed at like the names of cuts. Yeah. Right. Like, when that was like a point of contention, it just is like, okay, like, what are we doing here?
I think too, like, what's frustrating to me is, and I echo your sentiment on Beilein. Like, I think he is a really, really good college coach that turned a lot of, not highly rated, guys that you never thought were going to play in the NBA. He kind of molded them into really productive NBA players at Michigan. And like, so I understand the idea that was sort of behind the hire, but what I think is as frustrating to me is that obviously two very, very different teams and different sort of season situations, but not that dissimilar from each other in that, you know, they did this with David Blatt, where they tried to go outside and make a sort of out of the box hire, and with a guy that had, you know, no NBA experience. Now, you know, Beilein at least coached in college and like had always coached in the United States, and like, so that's a little different. But you know, you saw what happened with David Blatt. Like, the parallels between him and what happened with Beilein are pretty like eerily similar, especially the stuff about, you know, scrapping his offense that he wanted to bring in because either the players weren't buying into it or they realized it wasn't going to work at an NBA level. I mean, that's exactly what happened with, I don't even think Blatt made it out of training camp with his offense intact. I think at least maybe Beilein made
Brazil.
At least maybe Beilein made it into the first couple of weeks before the Cavs were like, yo, like these sets are not, you know, going to work at this level, or we don't have the personnel to run them, or whatever it may be. So that was super similar. The tuning out, once they sort of realized that maybe Beilein didn't have a grasp on how to coach in the NBA, reminds me a ton of what happened with David Blatt. And then the going to JB Bickerstaff, like Evan mentioned, and talking to him instead of Beilein is the same thing with the Cavs with Ty Lue when they would you know vent to Ty Lue because they were just like there was no respect left for David Blatt as a coach. And so like the same exact things are happening, and it's frustrating to me that the Cavs decided to go this route again, knowing that if it did go wrong, the sort of the consequences are so much greater than if it had just sort of gone wrong with an NBA assistant, where you're afforded, I think, a little bit more time than you are with somebody like Beilein. That is what frustrates me the most, is that they already sort of went through this and it exploded. I mean, they won the championship that year, but like it exploded in their face with David Blatt, and they were fortunate to sort of have Ty Lue and fortunate to have the talent that they had on that team that sort of superseded, you know, any coaching ability. With this team, it's so different. And like, they're so young, they're terrible at basketball, like all of these things. And now you're having a similar blow up where I'm afraid like the consequences of it in terms of young players and their development is going to be way more detrimental to this franchise going forward than it was obviously when they went to Ty Lue, because they had LeBron and Kevin and Kyrie and all that stuff. So that's probably another huge frustration of mine.
Evan, what do you make of just the timing of it? We joked about it already. Like, it's weird. Like, the whole thing of it's like weird. It's like the Friday news dump on steroids. What do you just make of this coming out now and like the whole thing, where it's basically just like kind of in this weird break in the season and like at a time when like literally no one's thinking about the Cavs?
It's, well, first off, it's funny Jordan mentioned the whole David Blatt, Ty Lue situation, because I was working on a story actually for Forbes about this, and literally I open up and saying like time is a flat circle for the Cavs and how you can kind of draw comparisons to this, but obviously different situations. But that's again super duper frustrating, like that the Cavs kind of can't learn from their own mistakes and they can't have any semblance of normalcy. And I think that kind of them not being able to get out of their own way and at least a coaching regard, just kind of goes hand in hand with the fact that this news dump was just unexpected. And like I said, it's just frustrating. And like at the same time, I don't think I was surprised, because like you alluded to when we started recording, I kind of had knowledge of this prior to the situation, but I'm like waiting for the shoe to drop. And I'm thinking it's like 9 o'clock on a Sunday night, and I'm thinking, okay, they're not going to say anything at this point. And so I started like closing up shop, and I'm like, they're going to say something tomorrow morning. And it'll make sense because it's a holiday for most people, and then the news cycle will be fresh. But no, they drop it at 11 o'clock, and I'm like, why can't there be any like subtlety or nuance to the fact that I'm maybe, and shout out to Jeff Nomina on Twitter, but like it is starting to get a little concerning at times with how rapidly and quickly bad news or unfortunate situations, especially with this season, because I mean, you could write in the chapter of Cleveland Cavaliers history, or the book of Cleveland Cavaliers history, John Beilein is going to have a couple chapters just how weird and bizarre things have been this season. Jeff did note that like it's just frustrating overall that bad news in general just seems to always come out of the Cavs, and it always comes at the most inconvenient time. And I think you and I both agree, Chris, in the regard that there's just never a dull moment, and there's never going to be a time where a 14-win team isn't going to be on making headlines for all the wrong reasons. Instead, when we should be talking about how exciting Kevin Porter is, or how Darius Garland is showing flashes of potential, and Colin Sexton is leading the team in scoring as a sophomore. But no, instead we're talking about our 67-year-old coach who lost his love for basketball after half a season coaching this team, and the fact that the Cavs are now likely going to turn to his associate head coach, who is also a finalist for the job, makes you wonder, like, why didn't Cleveland just sign Bickerstaff to the head coaching position when they first hired Beilein to begin with?
Yeah, I think that's right. Okay, we're going to take a quick break and then come back with more from myself, from Jordan and Evan on this episode of Locked On.
Hey guys, Evan here, co-host of Locked On Cavs, the number one Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, and I'm here to talk to you about stress. The stress of daily life weighs on us all. Whether you're an elite athlete or just a regular person trying to get through the day, muscle pain and muscle tension is a real thing. That's why I use Theragun, the handheld percussive therapy device that releases your deepest muscle tension using a scientifically calibrated combination of depth, speed, and power. As I mentioned before,
I am a Theragun customer, and I'm very happy with my product. I use my Theragun to help me out with the general tension and stress from a long car ride and just the day in general. Also, it really helps when you're a fan of the Cavs or any Cleveland sports team. So, feel better naturally, treat your pain, and get back to your life. Try Theragun risk-free for 30 days or your money back by going to theragun.com/lockedon. For a limited time, my listeners to this podcast can get a free charging stand with purchase, a $79 value. Again, that's theragun.com/lockedon. One more time, theragun.com/lockedon.
Okay, we are back here. Myself, Evan Demerow, my co-host, and Jordan Zerm. So I want to bring up this. JB Bickerstaff did very well, apparently, in the coaching hire or the coaching hire process last summer. I would be shocked if he wasn't the interim coach. I would be shocked if he's not one of the 3 to 4 leading candidates for this job. Now, he's been a head coach twice before, an abbreviated, I think, just interim stint in Houston, and then was the head coach in Memphis last year, got fired, replaced by Taylor Jenkins, who's done, and they also got John Moran in there as well, but Jenkins has done a very good job kind of modernizing that team a little bit. Obviously, I don't think we have a complete read on him as a coach. He's only been in kind of weird situations. The Cavs certainly would be a weird one. I do believe that he kind of has a better rapport with some of the guys in the locker room than maybe Beilein did at this point. That's maybe something that could help them at least get through the season. But to touch on something you both have hinted on, you know, I don't know if he's like a good hire. I also would have preferred someone like Nate Tibbetts or Jordy Fernandez, two guys who the Cavs like knew because they were with the Charge before they ended up in their various spots. Now, like, there's other guys you could have gone to. David Vanderpool to me would have been someone that would have made a ton of sense in the world. Developed guys in Portland. Obviously, there's some similarities to that situation and to what the Cavs are trying to do now. You know, I think he could still make sense if they didn't go with JB Bickerstaff, but I would be sort of surprised if they didn't. I don't quite know, other than the offensive stuff or like anything like that, if what the clear sort of logic was there. You know, I know that there was the bit about like they wanted to have a succession plan in place and everything. Okay, that's like never really worked before, but okay. Do your thing, I guess. I look at this and I just like wonder, you know, I think all I would want out of the next coach, and maybe it's Bickerstaff, maybe it's like Jordy Fernandez or somebody else, whomever, I don't know. I think the Cavs' next coach, like if that coach can just like get them to competency and get them to a point where like they are just a normal bad basketball team that makes progress and like does stuff. If they could just be like the Charlotte Hornets, that would be super dope. And that's like a very sad, depressing thing to say. But if the Cavs could be like the Hornets or like this year's Suns or like pick any other sort of baddish team that is just kind of that exists and like plays hard and like maybe if things break right 1 year, they could like get some stuff. They could take a step to that next season, the season after, something like that. If their next coach could lead them to that, that would be a big win. I don't care who goes first here, but like, what do you do? That seems like a crazy goal and like a very basic goal, but that's where I'm at. Does that make sense? Does that make sense to you guys? Does that seem like a logical kind of outlier here from where we are?
Yeah, I'll kick this one off. I think that, I mean, it is sort of a sad and low goal to get to, but, you know, from last year to this year, it doesn't really feel like anything changed. And in fact, it sort of feels like they're almost just worse this year, which like should not in any way, shape or form be the case. Like, I don't remember, and maybe I'm just completely wrong on this, but I don't remember them turning the ball over at the rate that they're turning the ball. I know they're last in the league. I don't know how many it is per game, but like they have thrown some of the most nonsensical, lazy, just dumb passes I think I've ever seen a Cavs team make this season. And you know, their defense, which has always been, no matter who's on the team, has always been just pretty bad in the regular season for as long as I can remember. But like, transition defense is a joke, and there's been no improvement in that area whatsoever. And like, it's not like this team had a quote unquote influx of talent, but like, if you're adding Darius Garland and Kevin Porter, who you know, looks like he's going to be a really solid piece for this team. And maybe, you know, there's a higher ceiling than what many of us thought. And maybe he turns into a really, really great player. And that would be great. But like at the very least, you added some guys that the roster didn't have at all last season. And yet they're just as bad, if not worse. And like that should not be the case. They obviously shouldn't be winning like even 30 games or something, but like to be 14-40 and be as bad as they are still in all of these areas is concerning. So yeah, I would love to lose some of the drama, lose some of the drama that was fine when it was here, when they were winning and going to the finals, because that's just what came with it. But now this type of drama on a losing basketball team that, you know, isn't going to sniff the playoffs for a couple of years and is going to have multiple high draft picks again. Like, it just is so unnecessary. And so, I would love for like next season and their next coach to just focus on the player development, not have leaks all the time. That seems to be a constant with this team, and really just actually start to build towards something that resembles a plan and a sort of outline for where they want to go with this roster as they sort of move further away from the second era of LeBron. And you're just in no man's land right now, especially with, you know, player development and as well as just how they function as a basketball team. So yeah, it's an incredibly low goal, but I think like that's, you know, it's pretty embarrassing that that's sort of where they have to get to. Cause that should not be what this year, look like at all, because they already sort of went through that first really awful, painful year of the rebuild. This should have at least been a minor step forward, and it just has not.
No, I agree. It hasn't been a step forward at all. And I also agree where it feels like it doesn't feel like the Cavaliers have actually made any growth or internal progress. I mean, Kevin Porter has been a delightful surprise, and I'm sure people who listen to this podcast know, because Chris and I talk about it ad nauseum, but it just kind of feels like the Cavs have been stagnant this year just overall, and just feels like they're, it's like you alluded to in the first segment, Jordan, like the Cavs were trying to get cute, and the fact that they hired Bayline, and maybe he had a really good interview process and he really won over Dan Gilbert and Kobe Altman, because I know that Terry Peluto today said that Bayline wasn't a Dan Gilbert hire, even though for the longest time, Dan's white whale in terms of a coach was having a college coach. Like, he would harass Izzo every time the Cavs opening would open up. And it's just like, yeah, maybe they got a little too cute of it. And a lot of the guys that Chris listed earlier, like David Vanderpool and Jordy Fernandez, and I'll throw Alex Jensen into the ring as well, because I think he'd be a solid option. He used to be a head coach for the Charge. Like, these were all legitimate candidates the Cavs were interviewing and linked to during this coaching search last year that I thought, okay, these are respected lead assistants or assistants that are high enough on the least be on the first bench in a coaching staff, and they have a lot of clout and they have a lot of player development experience, which is a big buzzword when it came to this coaching search, it felt like at first. But I think any of those guys would be solid choices. I've always been a big Jordy Fernandez advocate, because he's kind of the mastermind of the Nuggets offense, especially last season with how crazy efficient it was. Like, he was a big advocate of that. And I mean, even like guys like a Retreat, if you want to consider them, like even Dave Yeager, like, he rubs your front office the wrong way after a while because he's a bit bullheaded, but he's an overall solid coach and he was building something successful in Sacramento. And I think they're starting to, maybe the Kings are realizing they shouldn't let him go for Luke Walton based on how the season's going with them. I mean, I don't 100% know. I haven't spoken to anybody who covers the Kings closely, but I'm just assuming based on record and how the season's going. But I think the Cavs, it's absolutely paramount that they actually get this coaching hire right for once. And even if it is Bickerstaff, I think he does have a leg up on the situation because he's connected with guys on this roster. If you really want to like point out a big flaw of his, I do believe he was brought in to help coordinate and orchestrate this team's defense. And the defense is bad, if not worse, compared to last season. And it's pretty pathetic to watch this team defend sometimes. But a few legs up he has is the fact that he has the respect of the veterans, and that trickles down. And like, I know from personally, like, guys like Alphonso McKinney think highly of him. Colin Sexton thinks highly of him. I know Jordan Clarkson in his time here with Cleveland thought the world of Bickerstaff, and like, I think that those are all solid options. And if you retain most of this coaching staff, you have guys like Antonio Lang, who could be an up and coming coach as well, who, like Chris noted, was well regarded in Utah and was a big part of Rudy Gobert's development. But there's the pieces there, but it feels like the Cavs just kind of got too cute and thinking outside of the box here and trying to establish this whole culture thing by bringing in a guy who I think at this juncture of his career wants to be more of a teacher to younger players, and he's not going to be able to obtain that with the Cavs and in Bayline. And I don't know where they go from here, but it's absolutely paramount that they get this next coaching hire correct, because I was doing a little research today and they've gone through 7 coaches in the last decade, and that includes Mike Brown coaching here twice. And so
iconic shit from the Cavs.
It's just like, you got to get out of your own way eventually. And we can scream this until the cow from the mountaintops, until the cows come home and all that, whatever lame metaphors I can throw out here or similes. And it's just so frustrating, because it feels like the Cavs we know are supposed to be bad, but stuff shouldn't be leaking out about how bad it actually is. And maybe like a lot of that does fall at the head coaching position, and hopefully they get this right. But I don't know. The more I talk about it, the more frustrated I get with just the whole ineptness of how the Cavs are handling this.
And I think too, you know, we talk about, Evan, you mentioned Terry Pluto's column about how it wasn't, you know, exactly a Dan Gilbert hire, and you know, who knows what it actually was. But I think, you know, if Beilein, whether it's today, whether it's before their next game on Friday, ends up stepping down, and I would assume there would be some sort of press conference from Kobe or Dan or both kind of addressing the situation. Like, I think it needs to be a really tough press conference for them. I think,
it's interesting, because it's like, I don't know if they would have one, because that is not their MO. And that drives me crazy. I bitch about this all the time.
Yeah.
Like all the time. But like, it is not even just like, I think transparency is good, because you should be like held accountable to like the media. And like, frankly, like, you know, just trying to leak stuff through your certain people is like shit. Like, come on. Like, that's just shit. You are not a state secret organization. You know what I'm saying? Like you're an NBA basketball team. Like, I'm sorry. Like, this isn't like state secrets. This isn't like the aliens existing. Okay. Number two, like, for your fan base, like the hardcores and the people on like tweeting about the Cavs and like Nam and Dave and Justin and like people on Twitter that are talking about this are like, they're going to pay attention. They're going to get alienated. They're going to get annoyed, but they're going to pay attention. You're in a city that is like, you're probably a lot of people's second or third favorite team. You act like a dumpster fire whenever LeBron has not been around, like literally just a pile of trash that has just been lit on fire. I think a lot of like Donald Glover, like walking into the burning apartment in Community when I think about the Cavs.
That's what they are. They are that gif. Yes.
Yeah. They're just that. You should like explain and just like be honest. Don't make a fucking sales pitch. Just be like, look, like we messed up. If they could just like be earnest about what they do wrong and like be like, okay, this is just like, we're learning from this, or we're doing better. And that's maybe not Dan Gilbert's MO. And I don't think that's necessarily Kobe Altman's MO. It would have been David Griffin's MO. And like, it's not saying that is right or wrong per se, but like, I think some transparency, I think you're exactly right. A hard press conference, because the whole spin on this was, Kobe Altman met John Beilein at like Mike Gandy's wedding, and like someone's wedding. I think Mike Gandy's wedding, who played for Beilein, is a Cavs assistant GM, and like hit it off and became like in love with him as a coaching hire. If you're going to make that your thing, own it. Just own it. Just actually own it. That would be like a big, big step forward for them.
Yeah. And, you know, I tweeted this earlier today. I think at least the people I follow and Cavs people have been sort of kind of pretty hard on Kobe Altman. And I think like, I'm not fully there yet, but I do think that because I think it's really hard to separate yourself from Dan Gilbert when you're a GM of this team, especially when you were sort of just the only option left after Dan Gilbert decided he didn't want to bring David Griffin back. And like, but I do think that whenever there is a press conference, whenever they meet with the media, sort of talk about things, I do think that it's probably time for Altman too to kind of like like, I do think there needs to be, like, this season and next season, is a lot of it's going to fall on his shoulders. I was sort of willing to, you know, as be at the Kyrie Irving trade, which was literally like the first thing he had to do as GM, which I don't think is fair in any way, shape or form. And, you know, whether it's the Colin Sexton pick, which, you know, however you feel about Colin Sexton, there was a heavy Dan Gilbert involvement in that. And that always freaks me out. And
I mean, so it's a fact that, like, part of the reason they wanted Colin, and I can understand this, is like, he worked out for the team. It wasn't like going out of his way to be like, he wasn't like going out of his way to like not want to be in Cleveland, and like that mattered. But like,
absolutely,
I get it. But that was a thing, and that's the kind of stuff they sort of do.
And if you're, you know, and if you're Kobe, and part of the deal early on was like, Dan Gilbert's going to have this influence with you, then fine. But I think at a certain point, you know, he's got to take a lot of ownership for the direction of this team and where it's going. And I think there are some hard questions. I don't think, even if Gilbert like really wanted Beilein and had the final say on it, I don't think it would have happened without some sort of sign off by Kobe. And Kobe obviously spoke incredibly high of Beilein at their press conference. Not like he wouldn't, but I mean, he seemed very like he revered him. And so I think there needed to be some serious questions asked, not only about like, you know, what were you guys sort of thinking with this hire? And, you know, how could you not have seen that this was one of the outcomes that was, because I don't think there's any surprise. There shouldn't be any organizational surprise that like this is something that could have happened. I think it was pretty easy to see from past experience that this is absolutely something that could happen. And then just, you know, between that and, yeah, they're like Evan said, they're sort of just running in place right now. You know, what is your plan as you guys kind of go? Because this is fairly embarrassing, I think, is a word we've used for how many coaches they've run through. And, you know, for year two of a rebuild, kind of where they're at right now. So I think there needs to be, whenever the opportunity arises, like it is time to start sort of questioning a lot of these upper management decisions in ways that maybe that when LeBron was here, and those four straight finals appearances and all that, that maybe weren't being asked because of the winning, even though there was a lot of dysfunction going on regardless. But I think now it's maybe time to really, you know, put them on the spot, because this is, I think it's disappointing and sort of embarrassing for all of us that either cover or just watch the Cavs as fans.
100% agree on that. And I think, again, this is all things we should see them do. We need to see them like sort of figure this out and like prove they can be competent. Like, it is, again, like LeBron is the salve to a franchise's incompetency. So like, they got some work to do to kind of prove that like, 20 plus years without making the playoffs without LeBron is just like an incredible indictment on a franchise's ability to not work without a guy that they want, that was born in Akron, happened to decide to come back, et cetera, et cetera. Here, we'll kind of, I think the last big topic we should cover with this is, number one, I think we all agree that you can't really bring Beilein back for the end of the year at this point. It would just be too awkward, correct?
Yeah, no, you can't, because the Cavs players already know that he's not the right guy for the job.
Tristan Thompson tweeting about the All-Star game when this news broke was just incredible shit.
We need to touch on that Colin Sexton quote from Sean Devaney's piece.
That's next.
Okay, because I don't know. It's just like the players don't already know, and they're not really talking about it because the Cavs like to pretend everything's rainbows and sunshines in that team. And Beilein walks into that locker room and he's accepted the fact of what they already know is true. It's going to just be spectacular to watch happen if that actually does happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, to me, this was over when Kevin Love was firing passes because he was upset about a set that was being run. This was over when Tristan Thompson lost his mind on Beilein on the sideline. And like Evan said, they love to like downplay this stuff and be like, oh, it's just heat of the moment. But like, in reality, like, that was it. Like, I don't think there was, I think they had already sort of turned on their coach at that point, you know? So like, this has been, yeah, you can't bring him back, because even if like these rumors hadn't come out of like, oh, he wants to step down now, I think like the players had been over it for, if not from the beginning of the season, as, you know, Ryan Russillo said on Bill Simmons' pod today, then, you know, halfway through the first half of it or whatever it may be. But I think it's obviously by their body language and how all the leaks that have come out that, you know, this has been something that's happened for a while. So there's just no way you can bring him back after this.
So here's the aforementioned Colin Sexton quote from Sean Devevney at Forbes. He wrote this piece, talked to Colin at All-Star Weekend. And here's the quote. And this isn't like the most verbose quote in the world. But again, Colin Sexton, like, does not love to talk. Okay. I interviewed him, like, for context. I interviewed him, like, before his rookie year even started at, like, a basketball camp. And I asked him, like, some fluff questions. And I was just, like, trying to, like, see if I could just get him to, like, open up. And I asked, he went to the same high school as Lil Yachty. And he was just like, okay. Like, he just doesn't care. That's not what he wants to do. He's just, like, not even that it was a good question, but he's just not, like, that's not a game he wants to play. His media sessions after games are like 3 minutes long. And that's like nothing, you know? But this is what he said. Quote, "You know how he is. He is very detail oriented and it's detail, detail, detail. He loves details. And he always wants us to make sure that when we're out there, we're giving it our all. College coaches, you know how they are. They want you to go 1000% every second of the day. He's been in college for 20 years, more than that. We've had to tell him, like, coach, we've got 82 games. We can't kill ourselves." That is just like, if Colin Sexton, who, and Evan either said this when we started recording or like, right before, but for Colin Sexton, the dude who like just loves basketball more than anything else in the world, who's just like, the work ethic is like one of the, when you ask people what they like about Colin Sexton, one of the things that people in the organization, people around the league will tell you is like, the dude's work ethic is real, right? Like that is like a big, big thing for him. For him to say that and just be like, we need to like not do so much is just like, it's wild to me. And it tells you that like we're in February and we're 2/3 of the way through the season or whatever. And if John Beilein, it hasn't like learned to take his foot off the gas now, like what are we doing here? Like, what is that?
It's really incredible that, like you said, Chris, like the one universally agreed upon positive about Colin Sexton is that he just works. And like, if he's going to make it in this league, it's because he's just a tireless worker and just never wants to stop playing and going hard. And even he had to be like, yo, John, you got to chill. Like, it really is absolutely incredible. And, you know, it's a small thing, but it every time I watch a Cavs game, it sort of reminds me of, maybe it's a symptom of it, but like when John Beilein, if the Cavs get a stop or like they swing a ball to an open man, it's a three and Beilein's just like clapping on the sideline and going like, come on. Or like when they get back on defense and it's a big possession and he's like doing the same thing and going like, let's go. Like it reminds me of, yeah, like a college coach or like somebody like coaching a youth basketball team and like cheering them on. And like, it's such a small thing, but I think it represents a bigger thing with Beilein and the disconnect with the players is like, he's doing that stuff. And I guarantee you there are players on that team that look over to him when he's clapping and rah-rahing and then just roll their eyes. Cause like, it's the NBA. Like it's just, that's not what, you know, maybe coaches will do that every once in a while, but like he's doing it every possession. Like he's got to motivate his youngsters to like, it's just, I don't know. I notice it all the time. And I think it's a symptom of a sort of, like we talk about, he just has not adjusted his style to the NBA game. And some of that, maybe a lot of that is not his fault. He's used to coaching college teams for his entire career. Like this is just what he knows. It's so hard to all of a sudden change how you've been running practices and how you've coached your entire career, which is just another reason why it was sort of a head scratching hire for me. So, but I always think about that when you hear a quote like that from Sexton, or you hear about how, you know, his style is sort of rub guys the wrong way. And then you see him just like clapping like a proud dad on the sideline. And you're just kind of like, I don't know, man, I could see how that would get old real quick. And here we are at the All-Star break and he's still doing it. So I always laugh about that when I see it.
Yeah, no, I think that's, I think that's just a, I'm still frustrated because the more I think about it, the more frustrated I get, but no, Colin is a player of very few words. He doesn't like talking to the media. I mean, he'll talk to the media if he has to. But like Chris said, his media scrums are super brief because he gives really quick and just like non-direct answers. And all he really wants to do is just play basketball. And doesn't feel like talking about it. But like, Jordan, it's funny you mentioned that because I have noticed that after a while, like being there in person and then like watching the games on TV, like Bayline is standing up the entire game. He is like pacing the side, like he's pacing his side of the sideline. He is uber intense the entire time. Like, bro, just chill out. And like, I think that's maybe like you said, if you do that every now and then, it's okay. Like words of encouragement, and words of affirmation probably get you very far, especially when you're coaching teenagers and younger players, and maybe some of the older guys appreciate it too. But if that's like you're constantly your MO, like, yeah, that gets grating and it feels fake as hell after a while too. And maybe that's, it just led to his there's a lot of things John Boeheim did that kind of led to his downfall in Cleveland. But I think him taking the college approach and not realizing it wasn't working early enough into the season, just kind of set him on this course that was the point in overturn, because like we've all kind of just agreed on, like we all saw this coming, especially at this point, but maybe the timing of it's just so Cavaliers it hurts.
Yeah, good suit game though, John Boeheim, gotta say. Do appreciate that he had different, like his fits were, you know, kind of rolled a little different than like most NBA coaches go to the dark suit. At least John Boeheim was trying stuff. I can roll with that. Probably maybe the highlight of his Cavs tenure. Okay, we'll wrap it up on this, guys. Just each of you give me one thing. We'll go Jordan, Evan, and then I'll go last. Give me one thing you want to see the rest of the year from the Cavs. Just, it could be a player thing. It could be something with the coaching situation. Anything we haven't touched on yet that you just would like to see over the post All-Star break Cavs, what do you want to see?
I think I would like to see, Darius Garland sort of has been pretty, I don't know if I want to use the word bad, but just sort of like in a malaise for the past, I don't know, month or so. And whether that's, you know, if you think about it, this is a dude who played 5 games in college and now he's all of a sudden into a tumultuous 82 game season. So I think the rookie wall is a very real thing that he's run into. But I also just, I would like to just see more development from him. And that's sort of sometimes where you wonder, okay, is it coaching? Is it, you know, Darius sort of just going through very normal struggles for a guy that that played barely any collegiate basketball at all, all that stuff. But, you know, he obviously, to me, like has the ability, and he has plenty of flashes that make you say, yeah, like I can see exactly what the Cavs saw in him. I can see, you know, what the type of player he can turn into, but there's still just far too many games where it's almost like he just doesn't really exist on the court, or he goes through, you know, stints where he's just so passive, or he's still trying to hit that floater, or he's not shooting well from three. So I would really love to see the type of like progression we've seen from Kevin Porter Jr. I would love to see at least some signs of that from Garland as we sort of go into the second half of the year, because I think, you know, obviously, talking about Colin Sexton is very polarizing, but I think the difference with him and Garland is that we sort of can see Colin Sexton's ceiling, whereas with Garland, we have no idea what it is, but you would think that it would be, you know, I think it's obviously higher. I think he has many more skills as a basketball player. And so it's been a little disheartening to sort of watch him the past month. I know he was dealing with the flu or some sort of illness, whatever it was, it sort of knocked him out for a little while, but I think if there's one big thing for me, it's just him becoming more aggressive and a bigger part of the offense when he's out there, because, you know, after, I mean, he's the crown of that draft class, taken 5 overall, and, you know, Porter Jr. I think has made a little more of an impact, but, you know, Garland is the guy that you really are hoping that's who you're going to build around. You don't take somebody at 5 without that idea intact. So, I'm hoping for a big step from him now that he's had some lengthy time off after the All-Star break, and we'll see where it goes.
I guess an overall wish I have with the Cavs is Jeff Green is finally getting a new home. He's just signed at the Rockets, so good for him. But I'm a big Jeff Green fan, so
love Jeff
as long Green. As he gets
Jeff
as long
Green,
as he gets to play in the NBA.
Good Jeff guy, Green, 100% of 100 rating on my end. Love that guy.
Exactly. I think we're all on the same page there. But no, I agree with Jordan. I think just seeing, but I'm just going to go with a broader stroke here. Whether it's JP Bickerstaff, whether it's Dan Giroux, whether it's Antonio Lang, I don't think it's going to be Lindsey Gottlieb who succeeds John Boeheim, because I think it's incredibly unfair to put the first female head coach in this position that is going to result in a pretty ugly end of the season, no matter what. I just hope that in the limited time, I think it's 28 games off the top of my head, I can't do basic math right now. The coach that is succeeds Boeheim just kind of sets forward and sets in motion just healthy growth and cultivation and development for these younger guys. And just because I think if they are going to be seriously interviewing for the head coaching position this summer, that's something you need to add to your resume. And the fact that, like, listen, you're not going to win a lot of games with this Cavs team. Let's just be frank, especially if Kevin Love's Achilles injury does end up becoming serious and he doesn't come back from vacation on Wednesday. It's going to just get even uglier.
Hanging out with his dog. Good shit for my guy.
Hey, he was hanging out with the president. Now he's hanging out with his dog. So let's just give him a little. But yeah.
if he Instagrams one more time, he's watching the Joker. I'm done. Done.
Listen, Chris, it's okay. It didn't win Best Picture. Stop trying to derail me with making fun of your favorite movie.
Fuck you, man.
I just hope, like, you can gauge success for any of these coaches in the fact that, like, these players are showing signs in progress. And I think Jordan makes the best point overall. Is like, Darius Garland is the crown jewel of this draft class. Like, Kevin Porter, I think, is going to be pretty solid overall. And maybe you get Colin Sexton to just kind of keep fleshing out his playmaking and passing abilities, because my Twitter mentions like to remind me all the time whenever I'm critical of Sexton that he is passing the ball. And maybe you keep encouraging that, and that's a good sign of growth heading into next season. That at this point, like with the way the things have gone with Boeheim and the way just the season's gone in general, the Cavs kind of have to punt this and start at square one again and hopefully get this right again next time. But if you're able to build a little bit of foundation to add momentum to heads towards next season, like, I'm totally fine with that. And like, I don't even care. Like, I expect this not to be fun basketball. I just want to find something positive to gleam out of this, because it gets so tiring sometimes watching this team play.
Yeah. All right. So mine is pretty simple. Evan wrote about this time isn't real for me. I don't remember when anything happens anymore. You wrote about this at some point. I think it's time, whenever the coaching change happens, just let's make one other change and let's move Colin Sexton into his six-man role. Let's just do it. Let's just kind of see where that goes. Let's get some data on that. Compare. I want to just get tape on these two different realities. Shake things up a little bit, you know, figure out how to manage everything else. You know, maybe if Tristan like wants to get out at this point, you have some time to do that. You know, if he like, this is going to get weird. So maybe if he wants to do that, just like, Tristan, if you want this, you're giving him money, but like, if you want this, let him do it. I think without question, though, I think the thing I would want to see is just move Connor to the bench and let's see what the last 30 games look like. If you kind of do what I think would make sense for them next year, you know, incorporate Drummond, incorporate Love, do the kind of stuff, and we'll see where this leads to. We'll see kind of how this year goes, but just try to end the year, I think, more than anything, on a positive note. And I think for me, I would start KPJ and I would move Sexton to the bench and see where that gets you. I don't know what that looks like. I don't know the roster implications of that, all that stuff, but I would like to see it. And I would like to see some other changes aside from a coaching change. If that coaching change is happening as we expect it to, and I think all indications are, it would be pretty staggering for us to talk again tomorrow or whenever we pot again and be like, hey, John Boeheim's still the coach of the Cavs. This is weird. And they have a road back to back this weekend. Whoop de doo. Like, that's just like a recipe for disaster. Just make the coaching change. Let's go on and then let's see what happens. Let's just make a roster change as well. Let's just kind of see how other stuff goes. Jordan, thank you so much for coming on. As you get out of here, just give everyone a plug of everything you have going on right now.
Yeah, this was really fun, man. I miss talking Cavs. And
do you though?
Maybe I don't actually, but I was fired up to talk today.
We picked a good week to start a newsletter. I just will say that
we did. You know, I'm just walking around LA yelling about John Boeheim. Nobody's paying attention to me. It's hard for me out here. You know. I am. Follow the checkdown. Just at the checkdown. We're the coolest NFL account in the whole world. That's scientifically proven. So, check that out. And then be sure to subscribe to Chris and I's newsletter. I can't even pronounce it. I'm excited for that. It'll be fun to do some writing again, and I think it's going to be super dope. So, those are my plugs. But thank you guys for having me on, and appreciate you guys for just your Cavs coverage. It's even though they're you know, in the depths right now. It's I will say that, and I'm not a part of any other team's Twitter, so I don't know how things go, but I it's very much appreciated the level of coverage you guys bring for a team that you could very easily just be like, nah, I'm not going to cover you guys or talk about you because it's really depressing. So appreciate you guys. You guys make it, you guys are doing God's work out here.
Thank you. And I actually have a quick question for you since Chris kind of gave me a non-answer. Since you are kind of following LeBron here and leaving Cleveland ahead of Los Angeles, what would you consider Chris to be your star duo on the Lakers or your partner on the Lakers? What player or coach? Because he said he's Frank Vogel, and if he was feeling frisky, he'd be Danny Green. And I'm like, Chris, he could be Anthony Davis if
thinking,
he wants
I was thinking highly of myself. I was like having a good mental health day.
Yeah, I don't know, Chris. You might be like, oh, it's a great. There's so many options here. Just because you do you want to be Kuzma because of your blonde hair? I don't know.
I don't have. Oh my god! Wow.
I take it back. I'm just. I would never. That was rude.
This
I'm
is
so
the
sorry.
Second. Look, no. This is the second best burn I've had. So I had one of my best friends in the world literally took a mag. I keep talking about fucking Joker. He said. Joker and Kuzma, this is a tough, extremely tough look for me. Next thing,
tough,
like,
tough way to end the pod.
Yeah, tough way to end the pod. But no, I mean, it could be worse. Like, I think I'd rather be Kuzma than, like, Dwight Howard.
Yeah. Yeah, nobody wants to be Dwight Howard.
Dwight Howard wants to be Dwight Howard.
Yeah. No, you're not Kuzma. You're, like, you know, you're a really important piece of the team, Chris. You're, Frank like, Vogel. Yeah, maybe you're Frank Vogel. I don't know.
Thank you.
Okay, that was a good save because you said you're a really important piece of the team. I'm like, it's like you're telling a bench warmer that he's vital to the success of the team.
Jason,
but he still can't.
Knives out, Jason Kidd, just like waiting. How bummed do you think Jason Kidd is, by the way? Like, you think he's bummed? Like,
his plan has been foiled. He's like, I thought we were supposed to implode and I was going to be the coach.
Yeah, I was going to get the coach of the Lakers, so even coach LeBron, win a title. And it's just Frank Vogel is like, actually, I'm very good at my job. Yeah, but go check out the checkdown. Check out an eligible man downfield later this week. We really picked the weirdest, best week possible to do that. Just aside from this John Beilein stuff, there's the Myles Garrett stuff. Jason Kipnis is now a Chicago Cub. I just saw a picture of Jason Kipnis in a Cubs jersey, and one of the weirdest things I've ever seen in my life. Doesn't look right. None of this is right. But Evan and I will be back again after this. You're going to have the second half of our award show. It'll probably feel a little different now considering like we recorded that when they just beat the Hawks and then like the Cavs went full Cavs.
There's some good energy in that pod.
There actually is like a lot of positive energy in that podcast. Like no lie. It was good times. But we'll be back later this week with that and then some more stuff as we gear up getting closer to Friday when the Cavs start a road back-to-back. But for myself, for Evan, it's been Locked on Cavs. And we'll talk to you soon. Thank you.